welcome to another catch-up episode. Got a lot of nice feedback from the last one, so I'm doing another one. And give me feedback for this one, or this may be the last one too. Well, there's been quite a bit going on. The main thing, you know, and I don't want to add to the panic and all that stuff, but I mean, it's a thing. It's a big thing. Like, Ireland is currently on lockdown. I'm talking about the COVID-19 or the coronavirus. Ireland is currently on lockdown at the moment. Happened yesterday, and it's amazing how much has changed almost overnight. Like, I saw somebody on Thursday, last person in my practice, my craniosacral therapy practice, was a baby, and I was talking to the mother. I made an appointment with her for the next week, as I would normally do, and she said, because she works, she has a business for herself, she's a beauty salon person, and she was saying, will you be here next week? And I said, well, I'm just going to follow whatever the government says. So when they close the schools, that's it, I'll close my practice. Thinking it might be in a week or two, but no, it was the very next day they closed the schools. And what we're trying to do here in Ireland is trying to get ahead of it in a way that Italy wasn't able to do. And now their system, their health system has collapsed. Not collapsed, but it's, you know, they're having to make very, very difficult decisions and not everybody's getting treatment. So we're on lockdown here. It's I've never, you know, in the whole of my life, I've never seen anything like this before. Such a big global thing. Like, I have friends all over the world, you know, social on social media and personally as well. And everybody is, all countries in the world are experiencing it. So it's a big thing. And it was like, with social media, I find I'm like obsessively going through, like reading. And I was kind of noticing, I was thinking, geez, this reminds me of 9/11. Like, I can remember when 9/11 happened, and I almost spent the whole day watching the news because it was so unbelievable. And I think this is similar in that there's so much going on. And it's going on a global scale in a way that it's never done before. I think my little brain is having trouble, like, taking it in. And I was laughing to myself because I was thinking, well, all that looking at social media in the past, I've been kind of exercising my discernment muscle, because there's so much disinformation and stupid memes and people being flippant and glib. And, you know, I like to laugh as much as the next person, but this is serious because people are dying from it and people are in a lot of distress, because apart from the physical health side of things, the mental anxiety that everybody is going through or seems to be going through is very intense. And particularly, say, now in lockdown, where everybody is just inside their own houses, social contact is, you're encouraged to limit it. The schools are closed, not because the children are going to get sick, but because they're being called vectors, which is a nice way of saying they're carriers. They're very strong carriers. They don't really get sick themselves, but they pass it on. So, say in Italy, what happened was the schools weren't closed, or when they did start to close the schools, the parents, in an effort to just keep things, the show on the road, keep their life on the road, they, you know, had to give them to their grandparents to take care of them so they could keep at work. And of course, all the grandparents got very sick. And the grandparents, unfortunately, are in the age bracket that are most susceptible to it and are at risk. So, yeah, we're all in our houses keeping it together. And it's difficult because you could just, I mean, I don't really watch the news on the telly. I haven't really done that for years. So I get all my news like through social media or just people telling me about things. And even with that, though, a lot of panic. So you're sort of left with yourself to get afraid or not get afraid. And it's equal amounts. Well, actually, there's way more. There's way more scary kind of, oh my God, the world is ending kind of stuff on social media. But in amongst that, there is some great stuff. So the discernment muscle that I've been exercising, because back when the internet started, God, everything was believed. Like, it was like, oh, well, it's on the internet, so it must be true. Now, of course, nobody takes that so seriously. And you can be discerning about what you think is real and what's not real. And of all the stuff that I've looked at, there's, you know, about three or four very good interviews, very informative, very balanced interviews that I've come across that I've found very helpful. I'll put them in the show notes. But yeah, if you're in a country that hasn't started, like the country next door to Ireland, the UK, they haven't closed the schools. Which has caused all sorts of funny situations with Northern Ireland, which is technically part of England, so they haven't closed the schools. So, yeah, that's kind of strange. So, but I hope they're right in what they're doing. I mean, I'm glad we've closed the schools because we're trying to flatten the curve. It's so that the health system doesn't become overwhelmed. That's what we're trying to avoid here. I'm not sure what the logic is in the UK, but even if you're... country is not doing that, I'd encourage you to do it until it's passed. Until you see the numbers of cases coming down, we're not out of it yet. So yeah, I mean, if you don't know the obvious stuff, wash your hands. Hand sanitizer doesn't really work unless it's got alcohol in it. I mean, if sorry to bore you if you know all this stuff already, but yeah, wash your hands. There's fat in the soap that actually kills the virus. And also, you know, have some little mnemonic or something that you say, because you need to wash your hands well. So you sing happy birthday to yourself or something like that. About 20 seconds of hand washing is very good and frequent. Anytime you come out, come back in, anything like that. And if you can keep your kids home from school, definitely do that. I'm thinking of it as community service. I'd be really surprised if I get it, but I want to be in solidarity with everyone else who's trying to do the social distancing. And yeah, keeping your kids home from school, if you can at all, that will slow it down. But yeah, the nice thing is that there's a lot of very lovely things happening around the world as a result of it. It's forced everyone to slow down, for one. Now, that's not going to be great for the economy, but it's given everyone time to think about things. Like, for example, they've got blue skies over Beijing now. They haven't had blue skies there in a long time because of the smog. You know, that's a lovely thing. And it's kind of, because it is this global thing, it's highlighting how maybe we need a global healthcare system. Because we're all affected. Like, I mean, God, here I am in Ireland, and wherever you're listening to it, you're going to be affected by this to a greater or lesser extent. And it's something that happened like thousands and thousands of miles from where I live, but yet we're all affected. And that highlights how we're all connected. It's not the best way to do that, but that's an element of it. So like I've seen in a few places, the idea being floated of a global healthcare system so that we can get to these things and not just leave it up to individual governments, because it's the individual governments we're too connected now that what one government does affects everybody on the planet. And there's all these beautiful, just locally, but I see it everywhere else as well. There's all these beautiful little like things to do with social distancing happening here. Like people are just offering to deliver groceries for people who are concerned and don't want to leave their house. Like, you know, people who are at risk, to help local businesses. People are being encouraged to buy gift tokens either online so for future. So if it's a local restaurant, you sort of buy yourself a dinner that maybe you would have had, and then you go and collect on it when all this is over, and you can go to the restaurant again or the coffee shop or whatever that you keep, if you're able, keep buying locally. A lot of the shops where I am are offering to deliver groceries and that kind of thing. People are being encouraged to get out. I think getting out is important. Get out if you can. Like, obviously, if you're in a city, it's harder to get out and avoid people. But if you get out and get into the country, that's lovely. And walk in the nature, that's all fine. That's not going to hurt anybody or yourself. So there's all those kind of things. And the slowing down. And it's like certainly in Ireland, you're kind of having an enforced, it's like a little meditation kind of retreat, you know, like people go on Vipassana, which is a silent meditation for a week or 2 weeks or whatever. It's like a chance to do that and reflect as well. So I think that's all good. One of the things that's kind of highlighted for me anyway is this whole thing about governments. And like, we've had an election here in Ireland, you know, America's ramping up for their election. The UK had an election a while ago, and it just kept reminding me of this thing. I wrote this post, I don't know, it feels like about 3 or 4 years ago now. And it all started with me kind of just one day, you know, two dots connected. It was like elections and online banking, which doesn't sound like those two are connected. But I can remember when online banking didn't exist. Like, I can remember when I had one of my first jobs and we used to get paid, and we'd all line up and get a check. Then we'd all at our lunch break have to go up to the bank and cash our check and get the money from over the counter. And I can remember getting a loan at the time, that time, to buy a CD player, which was like the biggest technology thing you could get. It was brand new and very schmick, and I was like, yeah, I want to get one of them. So I remember having to get a loan to buy this thing, and I did it all at the counter. Like, there was no even a room that you're brought into. It was all like documents. I had to bring all these papers, and you know, it was all awkward, like really awkward and cumbersome. And my daughter just put me onto this online banking thing recently where it's peer-to-peer banking, so I can just send her money really easily, or she could send me money back and forth very easily. And you know, they can split the bill in restaurants with this thing, and it's all on an app, and it's so easy. So I said, oh yeah, I'll get onto it. I set up this bank account in probably 10 minutes. And the app just walked me through it. It got a photograph of my passport and didn't even have to proof of address, didn't have to proof of anything. And they sent me out a card, and it's like a proper bank account. It's, you know, it's great. But I can remember, like, when the idea of online banking started to get floated, and nobody thought it was going to work. And me, I certainly didn't, because it was like, well, that's going to be hacked. People are going to hack that. They're going to get into other people's bank accounts. That'll never take off. That was the general consensus. Online banking seemed like such a utopian idea that was, you know, was impossible. Because when it came, like, we think of the current state of our online activities as very sophisticated, like I just described with that bank account I just opened using my phone, pretty much. But when internet banking was first, the idea was first floated. I don't know the specifics, but I can kind of remember what it was like in terms of the internet. You know, there was no smartphones. There was none of that kind of stuff. It was all websites, and websites were pretty shonky, really. They weren't super secure. They're not super tight the way they are now. And even now, they can still be hacked. And the idea of being able to look at your bank account on a computer and all you have is a password seemed crazy. And even when it did start, you know, you'd get sent this little keypad thing that you have to put in, you know, that randomly generates passwords and all this kind of thing. It's amazing that it happened and that it's so something that we just do now without really even thinking of it. Now, that made me go, well, if we can do that with banking, if we can do that with something that is so, like, people's money, you can't get more personal than people's money. And if that can happen, then how come we still have this whole voting thing in the way that it is now? Like, the idea of democracy and all that, I should preface this, that I'm not a political kind of person at all, okay? So it's not so much the who's, what party is right or anything like that, or who's right or what person should be in power. It's just the system just seems really archaic to me. Because if we can do that with online banking, why can't we vote like that? Like, why can't we have a sort of, I don't know, a citizen account, like you have a bank account, and you sort of log in like you log in normally, and you vote? And, like, why do we have to wait 4 years to vote on something really important? And that really, like, who's going to be in charge? And then that got me thinking about, well, what do we need the politician people for? Because as I understand it, like, the public servants do all the work anyway. Like, here anyway, the civil servants, there's a huge civil servant department, and they don't change when there's an election. You know, one government comes in, another government comes out, but the people who are actually implementing the policies, if that's the right term, they don't change. They're like, that's their job. So the actual implementation of the, in quotes, will of the people, that's going to happen anyway. So what do we need the politicians for? And that made me think, well, probably historically we did. You know, back in the day, certainly in Ireland, you know, the vast majority of the population, now I'm going back, you know, 300, 400, 500 years. And okay, yes, we had the British in here, and it was all, I'm not just generally how politics ran, right? Where most people were uneducated. So you needed somebody who could talk on your behalf, who knew what they were talking about and were educated and could make a good case for something and speak on your behalf. I can totally see how that was necessary in the past, but not now. Like, surely not now. And like, if anything, the, you know, all this, the data hacks and the Cambridge Analytica scandals and how the news is being influenced, like, the, that's all not great and a bit negative. But the flip side of that is the power of data, our data and our voice. So I don't get it. I don't get why we don't vote. Like, we're all looking at the issues every day. Why don't we vote every day if we need to? What, or why don't we? I mean, there are systems in place, like in Switzerland, they've got a direct democracy kind of a thing where they, the people put forward, well, let's vote on this thing. And then if you get enough people who want to vote on that thing, then it goes to the next stage and so on. I don't know the details of it. I just kind of think, surely we've got to this stage now. And like, it's kind of obvious that all the political systems seem to be breaking down. Like Ireland, as I said, we just had an election. And of course, there was like three different parties involved who got roughly equal amounts of votes. And prior to the election, they were like, well, I'd never form a coalition with that group. And, you know, it's a bit like Monty Python, where they're the Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea. You know, it's a very similar kind of thing. But they won't make a government anyway. And the last time this we had an election here, a similar thing happened. And it took them 60 or 70 days to form a government. Like, what do we need all that? Like, shouldn't we be able to do it more immediately, more quickly, vote? You know, I mean, yeah, I know you need a bit of time, like that. One of the aspects of democracy is that there is a bit of slowness in that, but surely we can build that into it. And we're not so like at the mercy of people we elect. And it seems unfair on them because they get all this power, and then it kind of, it's very hard to handle all that power, and it seems unnecessary to me. So yeah, if somebody wants to put that forward, I mean, I don't know how, like, it's to me, I kind of think, yeah, that should be a thing. I think, yeah, we should be able to vote every day and or vote every week or whatever, just more quickly and less need on the politicians. And then, you know, everyone will kind of go, well, that's a terrible idea. The people in power will never let go of the blah, 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 and that'll never, you know. Fine, I heard all those arguments to do with online banking, and they seemed more valid because I think people value their money a little bit more than they value their vote. I don't know, that's just my feeling about it. So yeah, I don't know how to implement it, but I think it would be good. It seems like it's more of a question. It's like, what if we do that with online banking, why can't we do it with voting? When I was talking about Italy there, I was just remembering Daniela Astone, who is in the center of all that, you know, Northern Italy kind of difficulty with the corona thing. But that's not why I'm mentioning her, because what I was, when I was, you know, editing that podcast, I was in the middle of it. And just the way she's very Italian. If you haven't listened to it, it's a great podcast. And the way she talks is very Italian. And then something, I can't remember what she said, but just suddenly I remembered this thing from years ago, right? Back like when I was writing scripts for films and TV and that kind of thing, I had this idea for an animation series and I sent it off to Silvio Berlusconi, right? And this was before he got into politics or anything like that. And he had this biggish kind of media empire in Italy. And the word in the animation circles was that he was commissioning. So I sent off my script and waited for a little while, I don't know, a couple of weeks, didn't hear anything back. So I thought, I'll give him a ring. Now, this was back, I don't know, the 80s? Yeah, the 80s, late 80s. And ringing Italy from Ireland, it wasn't something you did every day. So I think I might have had to go through an international operator to get through. Anyway, I was all, you know, a little bit anxious about it, ringing this number, and I got all my little pitch worked out and everything, and I was like, yeah, hello, I'm just following up on a script I sent for Mr. Berlusconi, and my name is John Dalton, I'm in Ireland. So I, you know, they heard all the clicks and whirs that you hear on the phone back then before you get connected. And then it got connected, and then this lady got through to this lady who, I don't know whether she was his secretary or somebody close to him anyway, and instead of saying hello, she said pronto, right? Now, I didn't know that that's the way people in Italy say hello. So I thought she was basically saying to me, okay, I haven't got a lot of time. I'm, you know, I'm the secretary of a very powerful and busy, important person. So hurry up and tell me what you want to hear. So instead of my like, oh, my name is John Dalton and I've got sent this script and I'm following, you know, she goes, you know, click pronto, and I'm my name's John Dalton, I'm just like spewed out all this stuff. And I think she thought it was a bad line or something, and there was a distortion because instead of going what, she said pronto again, right? So it'd be like if, you know, her hearing me and then thinking, oh, that's wrong. So, you know, hello. And then hearing this crazy Irishman like talking at a million miles an hour and then going, hello. Except what I heard was pronto. And I'm like, hello, my name's John W. And then her response is pronto. It's like, ah. Anyway, we figured it out in the end. But when I was talking to Danielle, it just totally reminded me of that really funny thing that happened all that time ago. I think I was saying in the last one that I was going to last catch up that I was going to be talking to Colleen Barry as kind of follow on from Daniela Astana. My God, that was another technical nightmare to try and sort out. I don't know whether the podcast, the interviews are getting harder and harder to organize, but there was no storms or hurricanes or anything like that for this one. But for some reason, I had a major catastrophic technical problem. I was all set to go. We had over 100 questions come in for Colleen Barry. Don't know what was going on there. Don't know why. She's got a lot of followers on Instagram, but wow, it's amazing how many questions we got in. I went to, normally when I have a podcast with somebody, I'll, you know, say, okay, you do two posts saying that you're going to be on the podcast, ask for questions. I'll do two as well. Spaced out over a day or two before running up to when we have our conversation. And normally, you know, if we get 10 or 20 questions, that's pretty good. First post that Colleen made, 100 questions, and they were all good. They weren't any goofy, stupid questions. Some of them were a little bit, but most of them were brilliant. And I almost said, you know, emailed her and said, don't do the next one. But I thought, I'll just let it ride out. And she posted another one. And yeah, another 100. These are more comments. But yeah, amazing. Amazing response. So yeah, so I'm all geared up, ready to kind of have this chat with her. And okay, just not working from my end. It was amazing. So we had to reschedule and do it a week later. I mean, it was good. It actually gave me more time to collate the questions and get them into kind of some sort of shape. But yeah, God, amazing, amazing response. And yeah, difficult. But anyway, great podcast with Colleen. And I'm in the middle of putting that together now. I had a couple of things planned that I was going to go and do and see. I was asked to open a degree exhibition in the Burren, which is a couple of counties up. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen now with the corona thing. I was invited to go to London as well to another opening, Vincent Camp's opening. That's probably, it was all in April, but I'd say things won't have settled down before that. So yeah, a few things that were in the offing but didn't happen or are not going to happen, probably. I'm sure it's going to be the same for everybody. Their travel plans are going to be changed. I put a post up about the heart on Instagram, which people seem to like. And it's kind of this thing of, like, usually when the heart's being described, it's been described as this pump. And that the pump, you know, that's a muscle, and the heart squeezes itself, and that pumps the blood around, and it sort of clenches down, and that's how it, you know, the heart works, which isn't actually the case, because embryologically, the way the heart is formed, it's like a ribbon of muscle that curls around itself to form the heart. And how the heart works is, it's like that muscle is almost kind of stretched back into that ribbon shape, and that stretching motion causes a vacuum which sucks the blood. Which, when I discovered this, it seemed like such a lovely way to think about your heart. Because if you think about your heart as being like a pump and it's clenching and squeezing the blood around, it's just something very, I find, tense and constricting about thinking about my heart in that way. Whereas when I think about my heart, and it's almost like having a little stretch, you know, the way when you've been sitting for a while and you stand up and you put your arms out and you're like, it's a lovely, you know, and you have that really nice feeling. It's kind of like I think about my heart doing that, and it's like stretching in the direction of like returning to being a ribbon. I mean, it doesn't, thankfully, completely return to being a ribbon. But, you know, that it's kind of stretching, and then that action causes the vacuum and sucks the blood. And that's a lovely idea of, like, the blood being sucked around my, you know, through my heart rather than being squeezed. And then the metaphoric way of thinking about it is that rather than my heart closing all the time and clenching down on itself, that actually my heart is kind of designed to open all the time, that it's continually opening and expanding. And that's a lovely way, I find, of thinking about my heart, that it's continually opening and expanding, because that's what's going on inside. Don't know if you saw the Oscars. It's kind of been a bit overshadowed, but I found the Oscars were lovely. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just watched little bits of it, but it just seemed to have a different tone to me, where even the way the stage was, rather than there being a big line and it's like, well, you're the audience, even though you're all celebrities, and this is the, you know, we're the performers. There was a kind of a nightclubby stage where it came out into the audience. That to me seemed like a kind of a significant of a difference. And then some of the movies that won, Jojo Rabbit, and, you know, I can never pronounce that fellow's name, Taika Waititi. Okay, I'm going to say that. And his speech, Joaquin Phoenix's speech, even though, like, I didn't watch The Joker, I don't really watch not scary, but disturbing films. I'm very careful. I kind of think about films a bit like food. I'm really careful about what I put in my inside me, because it affects me, you know, like I'll have nightmares and I'll be disturbed and I'll have flashbacks of, you know, if I see really graphic violence or just disturbing stuff. So from all accounts, it's a very important film, and, you know, but it wouldn't be one that I would watch. But his speech was great. I mean, you know, like, I'm a vegan and I, you know, love animals and I don't want to harm anything. And him talking about that, I think that's brilliant. And then somehow from that, I got led on to this article about this artist in Australia. No, Canada it was. And she's a playwright. And she was basically saying, I don't want any criticism from people. Well, the headline was that she only wants people of color to be critics. That's not actually true. She wants people who are indigenous to her, where she is. And of course, there was all sorts of, oh, I'm not sorry. But she has a point where she was basically going, people are, you know, normal theater critics, they don't really get what she's talking about, because she's talking about her heritage and her culture and, you know, to sort of criticize it. I think she just got sick of being criticized by people who didn't really know where she was coming from or what her plays were about. And so she said this. But it made me kind of think about, or got me thinking about the whole, you see that a lot with, particularly since the Me Too movement started, and just generally there's men who are kind of like, oh, well, you know, you can't even be a man anymore. And, you know, and why don't we have a National Man's Day? Like, there was National International Women's Day there recently. And I don't know, like, I think it would probably be no harm if men just kept quiet for about 100 years. Because, like, I'm a man and I think I have important things to say, of course. But it's like talking to somebody and, you know, you can't get a word in because they just talk all the time. I have a feeling that that's, like, in terms of the conversation, I feel like men, we've been just hogging the conversation for a long, long time. And that's a very, you know, I'm putting it, that's a kind of a very Pollyanna way of describing it. And we've done awful things. And I saw this photograph of Lenny Kravitz today going, like, why don't we let women run things for a while? Because, you know, men have been running it for this long and look where we are now. And I've kind of had that feeling for a long time as well. And that's not to say that women are going to do a better job, but they might. And, you know, this is the job that we've done, like the men who've done. So, yeah, I think it wouldn't be any, like, if you're a man and you get like, oh, well, what about me? Well, you're just unlucky to be born at this time when women are starting to get more of a voice. That's all. Like, we've had too much to say, really, I think, for a long time, pretty much since King Arthur. since patriarchy really kicked in. Before that, Like, my wife is originally from Papua New Guinea, and her her godmother, she's a matriarch. The tribe that she's, you know, is the custodian over, the chief of, is a matriarchal tribe, and it's fine. She's fine. It's not like anything, you know. I can see how that's as good as anything else. It's probably better. She seems like a lovely person. She is a lovely person. So yeah, I think, yeah, maybe it would be good. It wouldn't do any harm for men to just keep quiet for, yeah, I think about 100 years. I mean, yeah, I know we've been talking for a lot longer than 100 years, but let's do 100 years and see how we go. We can review it in 100 years. That's what I think. Okay, so that's it for this one. Yes, let me know if you like it. Really, I very much go on feedback. Very much go on feedback. I was only telling somebody recently about open source Cranio. Now, regardless of whether you think Craniosacral is complete rubbish or not, just for a moment, just suspend that. I mean, I know it works and it's great and everything like that, because of course I'm going to know that, because it's one of the things I do. But even if I didn't, it doesn't require any... I'm going somewhere with this, so just stay with me. It doesn't require any equipment, okay? So it's a skill that you just learn with your hands, and you can do a lot of good with it. So I used to teach craniosacral in Australia. I had a big, you know, the Australian Institute of Craniosacral Therapy. And then when I was coming to Ireland, I thought, well, I think I'll just make all my teaching materials available and online, and I'll start this website called Open Source Cranio, which I did, and I'll make all my teaching available, and I'll basically help for people in developing countries, because I thought this would be great in developing countries. You don't need anything, you just need skill. People could learn how to do it, they could help. It's very good with trauma, so it would be great to be able to help trauma, like, on the ground. And they'd be able to, you know, be a skill, so they could maybe earn some money and help their community. And it's a beautiful idea. So I put about 7 years into that idea, right? Open Source Cranio. I had this big, complicated website. I had a map of practitioners. I had all these mentorship programs where people, where existing practitioners could learn how to be mentors, to work with people in developing countries. And it was great. But it just wasn't picked up. It just wasn't taken up by the craniosacral community. And I think I was talking about this in the last one, about getting feedback from life and listening to life. This is what I do. I'm not saying you should do this. This is what I do. I spend a lot of time just listening and tuning into life and seeing, you know, trying to be in the right place for life. And so Open Source Cranio seemed like a great idea. Pure, very pure intentions. I wasn't doing it for money or anything like that. It was just to help, and it just wasn't picked up. And as the years went by, I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, why isn't there, you know, like, listening to the feedback and kind of going, it's such a good idea, and it's such a great, you know, why, of course it's going to be picked up. No, nothing. I mean, people were getting on the map of craniosacral therapists, but it just, and people were going, oh, thanks for all the free resources, it's great, and that kind of thing, but just nobody was kind of getting involved and going, oh, I'm going to go to this place and really picking it up. And the last thing I did really on it was, and it was kind of the, when I got to the point of going, you know, I think this isn't, I'm not getting the right feedback for this. The hosting for the website came up, and I thought, I mean, I could have paid it, but I thought, I'll put it out to the community and see, because I had a newsletter, I had lots of stuff in place. I thought, the hosting is, I think it was about $150. The hosting for this is coming up. Does anybody want to help with it? And I didn't get one email. So I thought, okay, that's the feedback, fine. And I shut the whole thing down. And it was a very graphic demonstration of, just because something's a good idea and, you know, seems like it would be a lovely thing, doesn't mean it's what life wants. So when I say, send me an email to, just letting me know that you like this, that's me kind of going, okay, life, if you want me to keep doing these catch-up episodes, let me know. And if not, fine, you know, I can... It's like the book I'm writing. I'm applying that to that as well. Like, if people don't get in touch and say, I really liked the chapters and want to hear more, I'll just stop doing it because I don't need to do any of these things that I'm doing. Oh, speaking of which, yeah, I should probably, I'm going to play the little Patreon thing because, yeah, the Patreon is feedback as well for me. And it's gone down. I mean, it was tiny and it's getting even smaller. So I don't know what's going on there. I mean, yeah, the episodes are not coming out as fast as they were. But like, I've got other things to do. And it's certainly not enough money coming in on Patreon to make me go, well, I'm getting so much feedback there. I know people are enjoying the podcast and all that. But yeah, it's going to get down to almost hosting prices, you know, the cost of hosting the website, because, you know, I have to pay for all this stuff as well. So by the time all that's paid for, it's very little money for the man hours I put into it. Now, I know I love it and it's fine and it's a passion and all that kind of thing, but it's still nice to get the feedback. So, right, I'm going to play the thing. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm really enjoying this podcast. I've listened to a few now and they're brilliant. And there's so many of them. And I've learned so much from listening to them. And you know what? If I met that John Dalton fella in real life, I'd love to buy him a cup of tea and have a chat with him. I'd love to do that every month if I could. Well, now you can. The tea part, at least, because this podcast runs on cups of tea bought for me by people like you who listen to the podcast and send me the price of a cup of tea once a month through the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word. And if you're one of those people who already send me cups of tea through Patreon, thanks a million. The tea is lovely and I really appreciate it. Now, the great thing is that if you can't afford to send me the price of a cup of tea or you don't want to, that's fine. You still get exactly the same podcast for free. It's sort of an honor system where the people who can afford it and want to pay for the people who can't or don't want to. So it's all lovely. So if you'd like to send me a cup of tea once a month, you can do that through Patreon. I'd really appreciate it. It makes a huge difference to me. So yeah, if you're not on Patreon, think about it, you know, getting on there and helping out in some way, because people come and go on Patreon, and I understand. And now more than ever, God, with all this corona thing, finding ways to send people money online, as I said in one earlier on, that's important. You know, like, I'd be encouraging lots of people to, you know, if you're thinking about buying art from any another artist, definitely buy it now. Send it to them now, because now is the time, more than ever. Okay, so so that definitely is it now. And do send me some kind of, you know, little Facebook thing or Instagram, just some little thing going, yep, keep going, it's great feedback. And I'll do more of these. Or if you've got a question, that's another thing. If you want to ask me a question about anything, feel free. Actually, I'll do better with questions. But yeah, I'll leave that to you. Okay, so till the next time. Bye for now.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle.